If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have a great guest for you coming up now on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. This is someone who can help with a common problem. Colleen E. Carney is the director of the Sleep and Depression Laboratory at the University of Toronto. And she's going to talk to us about how to beat those post-holiday blues. Colleen, thanks for coming on. How common is our post-holiday blues?
I think they're pretty common, and even if it's not specifically post-holiday, but it's just sort of a winter blues, I think some studies have shown that up to 90% of people will report that there's some change either in their mood, their energy levels, or sleep. So there's something that happens in the winter in particular, and it seems to get a little worse after the holidays.
And when you say it's pretty common, do you mean 30% of us have it, or 50%, or 10%? Where are we in that range? And is it worse? In other words, is it worse in areas that have gray skies, like Cleveland and Syracuse and Buffalo, or I take it Toronto has relatively good sun, being on the other side of the lake.
We don't have great sun. I mean, I wish we did. You know, there is a issue that does have to do with light specifically. Studies that actually look at latitude, it's a little bit difficult because it's not just, there's probably a lot of things going on. For example, people who live in really far northerly regions or people, there's some self-selection there. So people that couldn't tolerate that kind of weather don't move there, whereas people, you know, whether it's Cleveland or Toronto, we may live there and really hate the winter, be really susceptible to the low levels of light. So it's really hard to tell, but generally speaking, there is a relationship between the amount of light and rates of depression.
And now, so one of the solutions might be some light, but you're going to tell us some other solutions, because people have sleep problems because of it. They have what else? What other kind of problems manifest other than just they're depressed and they have sleep problems? Are there other things, or are those enough and great enough to call them to have medical problems and for them to seek some medical solution?
Yeah, I would definitely say that those two things are enough to cause a variety of issues, the health issues and mental health issues. But people often will also report changes in their eating habits, and they will report weight gain often in the winter time, and they notice big effects on their energy. Now, of course, sleep and energy, a lot of people assume they go hand in hand, but not necessarily. Some people just feel sluggish, even if they're sleeping longer than they usually do.
And how much of that is, now, do people say to you, is it just me getting old, or do I feel, is it sluggish because of the winter? And do they wait it out and see whether they get better, or is that one of the problems from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think people often assume that the decreased energy is, and to some extent, you know, feeling less vigor, not sleeping well. A lot of people will just assume, oh, this is just part of aging, and they let it go, which they shouldn't, because certainly fatigue is something that we want people to bring to their family doctor to check out to make sure there's not something else going on. We want people to get treatment for, I mean, something like insomnia is quickly and easily treated. So we really want people who are suffering from low mood, from fatigue, and from sleep problems to get in to see their doctor to make sure to get treatment if it's actually in the clinical range.
Now, you're in Canada, and so one of the questions, this is from a Mandy sent in, how soon could someone with a sleep problem get in to see you, and are you the one to see for a sleep problem that is occasioned by this, or are there other things I should do?
Well, I think, you know, there are If somebody is having something like an insomnia or depression that's been going on for an extended period of time, so for depression, if you've had pervasive symptoms like low mood, having difficulty experiencing pleasure, and then a host of other symptoms that go with it that can include sleeping problems and fatigue and concentration problems. If this has been going on for more than 2 weeks, then we really want you to get in to see your doctor. For sleep, if it's been going on more than a few months, then certainly we want you to get in and see someone. I'm at Ryerson University. I actually did my undergraduate at University of Toronto, but at Ryerson University, we treat people with insomnia and with depression, and we actually provide free treatment because we are always researching how these treatments work, how we can get better, and they are cognitive behavioral treatments. They're not actually medication treatments.
So tell us a little bit, and we'll be glad to have two segments with you if you can do that with us. The first one is normally 10 minutes, so we've got another couple minutes. And then if we run out of time in this answer to this question, you can start it at the second one. But how common is, or what is cognitive behavior therapy, and how well does that work? I understand it works better than medication, but talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia specifically, because there's, you know, cognitive behavior therapies for a variety of problems, including depression. But cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia is considered the frontline treatment for chronic insomnia, only because it's more durable than medication. So I would say that they're comparable in terms of the effect. But unlike medications, cognitive behavior therapy, after you're done the four sessions, you continue to remain symptom-free.
So
cognitive behavior therapy is a treatment where you change your sleep habits so that they're more in line with your body clock, that you're getting rid of the pairing of the bed with wakefulness, and you're just fixing any habits that might be getting in the way of a solid sleep.
What kind of habits would those be?
Well, it depends. I mean, for some people, they vary the time that they get up each morning. And so that provides sort of unsteady input into your body clock. So if you tend to get up, say during the week you get up at 5 o'clock and on the weekends you get up at 9 o'clock, that's 4 hours difference. And that's like, it's not like taking a trip from New York to LA and expecting that there would be no physiologic consequences to that. The mismatch between the clock inside of your body and the clock local time, there's a big mismatch there. And so it hurts your mood, but it also hurts your sleep, your energy levels. It can also affect the way when you feel hungry and what you eat. So we want people to have a regular schedule during the week. And for some people, that might be one thing that we fix. It could also be getting out of bed when you're awake for long periods of time at night, because lying in bed while you're awake and tossing and turning can actually make it more likely that the next time you get into bed, it's going to happen again. So we want people
now,
to
leave
the bedroom
asks us,
when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Lisa asks us, how long does that, she flies across the country, she mm-hmm. says three times a month, and she's flying, and she says lately she's noticed that she's had more trouble and she feels sluggish. Hasn't had that in prior winters, and she said, "Is this how long does it last, and does it get worse as you get older?"
The difficulty with being able to cross time zones, is that what you mean?
Yes, she's saying, mm-hmm. and we're going to have to take this when we come back because we're going to run out of time. But to give you the specific, she says she's been doing this for years, has never had a problem. This year, she feels very sluggish. And she wonders if it's happening because she's getting older, and she wonders how long it lasts, because it seems to be lasting longer for her now. You're listening to Colleen Carney from Ryerson University in Toronto, director of the Sleep and Depression Laboratory. We'll be right back with more from her on RadioMD.com.
Are you suffering from hidden allergy symptoms such as lack of focus and fatigue? How about bloating, joint pain, headaches, or anxiety? Hi, I'm Dr. Suzanne Bennett, natural allergy and wellness expert. I have condensed over 25 years of my clinical experience into my new book, The 7-Day Allergy Makeover, a simple program to eliminate allergies and restore vibrant health from the inside out. This book is for anyone who wants more energy, more mental clarity, a powerful body, and to live allergy-free. I am offering 4 free gifts when you order my book today through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. For more information, go to drsuzanne.com/book. Again, that is drsuzanne.com/book to jumpstart your healing today.
It's illegal and dangerous for teens to drink any alcohol and then drive. Still, 1 in 10 high school teens drank and got behind the wheel of a car in 2011. If you're a parent, be aware that when teens drink, it's usually to get drunk. Teenagers can't legally buy alcohol, but many get it from their homes or the homes of their friends. Drinking and driving is never okay. Make sure your teenager has a safe way to get home in case they're out with a teen driver who's been drinking. Put this in a parent-teen driving agreement, which should also include wearing a seatbelt and following their state's graduated driver licensing laws every time they're behind the wheel. Find a sample at www.cdc.gov/parentsarethekey. Parents really are the key to safe teen driving. Learn more at www.cdc.gov/vital signs.